We are back with the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are with E.O. Wilson, and we're talking about everything, I think. You talk about a Magellanic, it's hard for me to say, a voyage rather like Magellan took around the Earth to do so around a tree. I like the Magellan story. I think it's exciting. Unfortunately, he ends up getting eaten, I think, in the Philippines. I mean, a bad end for him, but it's part of that human need to explore. Is that biological with us?
I think it is. I think that human beings have traits of human nature. That is, where human nature is that those inherited regularities in the way our minds develop that allow us to form, for example, bonds with marital partners, with children, that cause us to see the world a certain thing way and like to eat certain things and do certain things as opposed to a great many others that we steer around. And one of them almost certainly is that human beings like a mystery. They want a mystery, and they want an unlimited array of mysteries before them. They want a world to explore. I believe that that is what has driven humanity to completely cover the Earth. In fact, the human beings who evolved, who had that tendency to keep moving, to keep exploring, were the ones who would be destined to cover the world. So that's very much in our nature.
When you talk about human nature, you make an elegant argument in Consilience about how little we know about human nature, how deeply we are connected to the rest of life. Mm-hmm. And yet there's this, again, we're back to that river in Egypt. There is a denial that is, well, somehow we are special and other. And many people do not want to be compared or part of that which you say is who we are. Is there reconciliation there?
Oh, very much so. We're very special. We're the only species with a capacity for language. We are way above our nearest relatives, the chimpanzees. I've just been spending the morning, as a matter of fact, at the nearby Emory facility for the study of chimpanzees and other primates.
So the Yerkes Primate Center, yeah.
The Primate Center. We're way above them in cognitive ability and the ability to communicate and to think abstractly, rationally, and so on. But we also have evolved from forms like that. To say that we have humble beginnings as a species going back a million years or more does not in any way devalue humanity. And in fact, I think it adds value in what should be our own self-esteem as a biological species that has emerged to an entirely new level of activity and thinking. But when you proceed to study the qualities of human nature that, in fact, we share with animals, the results can be startling. Let me just give you an example. It's pretty well established now that people avoid incest automatically because of a simple rule in development. People who are very close together in the first 30 months of life, one or the other, or both, are desensitized so that they are unable to form any close sexual bonding when both are sexually mature.
And that's discrete to 30 months. That is the very first 30 months, not
the very
60
first
months,
months,
not
of
2 months.
Life. Yeah, it's called a sensitive period. It's a very common phenomenon in behavior, just as, for example, there's a sensitive period in which you can learn languages most effectively. Well, it turns out that that and not the Freudian explanation is probably the correct one.
You were very kind to Freud, by the way. I thought that was nice of you.
Well,
and he was wrong.
Well, Freud was, of course, fundamentally wrong in a number of ways. But I'd rather stick to the straight line here in talking about what we do know about incest and avoidance. And note that it turns out that all of the other primates studies that have been made on non-human primates, apes and monkeys, show the same effect. So it's something we have evolved probably from a very early stage. Let me give you another fascinating example. At least I find it fascinating. And it's the preferred habitation of human beings. Studies have shown, I think the evidence is fairly strong, that human beings generally prefer to live in an environment with three qualities to it. They want to be on a prominence. They want to look out on a parkland, which grass with scattered trees and copses. And they want to be near a substantial body of water.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Of course it sounds good to you. But have you ever asked why it sounds good to you and why people will pay enormous prices to put those three elements together? And they do that around the world. Biologists have suggested that that is because humanity evolved not too long ago, too, as a species on the African savannas, that's our natural habitat, and that these were the most beneficial, adaptive, secure combination of qualities in an environment.
My reaction, I mean, the reason that those things are appealing is an aesthetic sense.
Yes.
And is this a matter of chicken and egg, or do these co-evolve? I mean, is our aesthetic supporting our, you know, what is good for our survival, or is there something richer going on than that?
I believe that genetics and culture have co-evolved. That culture evolves much more quickly, of course, than genetics. Genetics, the changes that lead to things like the way we avoid incest and the way we prefer certain habitats, and incidentally, all species of animals have that type of instinctive habitat preference. So that we have it is no surprise. It would be the big surprise if we had no habitat preference like that. They have co-evolved, and we are just beginning to understand some of the ways that culture and heredity are interwoven. That's what makes us distinctively human, is that manner in which they have distinctively woven. Much of cultural history in the human species has been the elaboration of our expression and our feelings that arise from those very deep epigenetic rules, they're called, as regularities in the way we think. We can understand a lot of aesthetics that way. Let me give you one other example. Human beings are most aroused, although they're not aware of it, it has to be shown by indirect measurements of brain activity, most aroused by abstract designs that have about the 20% redundancy in them, and that's about the equivalent of a curving asymmetrical cross or a maze with 10 or 15 turns in it. And as you look around through abstract art and pictographic language and the way we design magazine covers and on and on and on, you find that the illustrators and artists tend to settle on just about that level of complexity. So we may be able to understand our aesthetic sense in things like the environment, where we prefer to be in the environment, and the way we design our visual arts by much simpler and more powerful means than has hitherto been possible.
You talk about the arts as our attempt to just deal with our intelligence, that it is a way to come to terms with how we have evolved to survive. Can you make that same sort of generalization from that which you're saying we could design things that were responding to what we respond to? Do you have that sense about all of the arts?
We are just beginning. I think scholars generally are just beginning to explore what the innate, you know, instinctive, if you will, origins of aesthetics in art are. One of my favorite subjects is our response to the natural world. That would be logical crossroads of my own.
As a biologist, I am not surprised.
As a naturalist, mm-hmm. and then also as a student of human nature. And I've perceived again and again that people gravitate in their feel for the natural world, insofar as they respond to it, to the kind of environment I just mentioned, but also to the most complex environments like coral reefs and rainforests. Not to live there, obviously, but because, as we mentioned earlier in this conversation, people want a mystery. They want a sense of something that is beyond their understanding. It's called sublimity. The sublime is part of the feel that we have for the beauty of the earth. And in the rainforests, in the coral reefs, in the vast vistas, say, of untrammeled grassland, we have the prospect of mystery and expansion that goes on indefinitely.
This is Edward O. Wilson. He is a biologist. He is a scientist of the first order. Bill Russell and I are pleased to be with him, and we'll all be back in just a moment.